Have you ever felt a twinge of worry about AI taking over your job or diluting your creativity? Well, what if you could turn that fear into creative fuel? We've just published an amazing new ebook called The 4 Keys to Success in an AI World, and this is more than just a guide. It's a deep exploration into the human skills that AI can't touch, the skills that are essential for standing out and thriving no matter how much technology evolves. We're talking about real differentiators here like creativity, emotional intelligence, critical thinking, and much more. Inside, you'll find actionable insights and strategies to develop these skills, whether you're a creative person, a business person, or just simply someone who loves personal development. This isn't a story about tech taking over. It's a story of human creativity thriving alongside AI. Picture this: AI as your creative co-pilot, not just as a tool, but a collaborator that enhances your unique human skills. The 4 Keys ebook will show you exactly how to do that and view AI in a new way that empowers you instead of overshadows you. Transform your creative potential today. Head over to unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. Use the number 4, KEYS. That's unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. And download your free copy.
Before starting the podcast, I didn't have a body of work. You know, as I was talking about how I worked in finance and you know, I had good jobs, so to speak. But I didn't have anything that had my name on it or like was anything that I could, you know, show anybody. And I think now just even there's, you know, the unit or the size of the body of work can be a lot smaller. I mean, you don't have to have, you know, 200 episodes like me, but, or 1,000 episodes plus like you, but I think like a small blog post of just like, you know, here's the scope of the project, or here's the scope of my role, or here's where I got stuck or things like that. Like, really showcases how you think and how you adapted and the decisions you made. And I think that that's super valuable. And you never know who's going to read your stuff or reach out to you. And I think that that's really cool. And but that the feeling of like just making ideas happen and creating the smallest thing possible is incredible.
I'm Srini Rao, and this is the Unmistakable Creative Podcast, where you get a window into the stories and insights of the most innovative and creative minds who've started movements, built thriving businesses, written best-selling books, and created insanely interesting art. For more, check out our 500-episode archive at unmistakablecreative.com.
David, welcome to the Unmistakable Creative. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us.
Srini, it's an honor to be here. Thank you so much for the time.
It is my pleasure to have you here. So I found out about your work by way of one of our former guests, April Rin, who's one of my favorite people that I've ever spoken to on this show. And she referenced you in something about, you know, portfolio careers. And as somebody who hasn't had a real job for 13 years and got fired from every real job I ever had, naturally, this was of tremendous interest to me. And I think really, really relevant to everybody listening. But before we get into that, I wanted to start asking you, what did your parents do for work and how did that end up shaping the choices that you've made with your life and your career?
Yeah, great question. My dad was, he's unfortunately no longer with us, but he spent most of his career selling life insurance. So he was in sales and he... honestly, used to always talk about mentors and relationships. And I used to always kind of like learn through his stories related that way. And I think I just like love talking to him about his relationships with his mentors and how he got to his roles. And he kind of left Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, moved down to Florida on kind of a whim. And actually ended up getting a job at an unemployment office on a Friday afternoon. And that person who interviewed him actually turned out to be one of his mentors for a long time. And so just a fascinating, fascinating story. You know, and one of the lines that he used to always talk about, what he said then was that the guy was like, well, why should we hire you? And my dad said, well, I'm a diamond in a rough. You just gotta polish me up and I'm ready to go. And so just a beautiful story that has always stuck with me and is always very inspiring. And, my mom, was a, English as a second language teacher in high school, for many years. I'm not going to get the number right, but I want to say 10 to 15 years. And, you know, that's a really interesting job where a lot of times you, you know, the levels of acumen and intellectual brain power are very different. But the problem is just not knowing English as well. So much different than many other kind of classes in school. So I think a little bit of both. I've learned from both of them in many different ways that I think, in terms of teaching, I feel like a lot of the work that I do these days as a podcaster and as a, program design for, the community type work that I do is definitely related to the, teaching work that my mom did. And then it's just in terms of like relationships and mentorships and stuff, and just trying to be around, you know, the most inspiring people that you can. I think I got that from my dad.
Yeah. How old were you when you lost your dad?
It was actually on my birthday and I was, 22.
Wow. Yeah. So it wasn't early in childhood, but it was earlier in life than most of us ever expect to lose a parent. And anytime I've talked to people about this, I tell them like, I think there's probably no fear I have more in life than the thought that, you know, one or both of my parents would die before I got married or have kids, especially being 44. Mm. And you know, we had the Frank Ostaszewski, I remember telling him this, who was the director of the Zen Hospice Project. It was like, Frank, you're the person who might be able to answer this question for me. And he said, spend time with them now. Don't wait for these big moments in your life. But when you lose a parent that early in life, what decisions did you make about how you would live your life going forward based on that experience?
How did I change after that?
Yeah.
For me, it was a real kind of awakening and a real time period to start to realize that there's, you know, less people that are kind of personally overseeing me to some extent. It was in a moment to say, you know, this is now the time. And I feel like there was, you know, a lot of different life type things of just coming up to speed more, and taking more responsibility for a lot of my actions, for my learning, for my career. A lot of those types of things I think really started to, kind of emerge and strengthen after that. And then conversely, I'd say, you know, also just improving my relationship with my family, and thinking about, us and the family more than just me as a, you know, a kid, as an adult. So I think it took us some time, but eventually I feel we collectively, because through my dad's passing, we became closer as a family. And then a couple years later, we, started, doing a family charity race, together. And that really brought us together. And that was a real, I think when you go through a grieving process, it's a process and you're not entirely sure how long it's going to last for and where it's going to take you and stuff and, you know, what resources are helpful or whatnot. And I'm just speaking from my experience, but, it took us some time, but then once we found, a charity race, it was a way for us to kind of like celebrate my dad and a way for us to kind of move collectively forward. So that was a big piece for us. And, that's how I would say, like, you know, I, slowly became who I am now because of, those decisions and those experiences.
Yeah. Like, you know, we had a very close family friend lose a daughter who I grew up with very recently this year. And you know, the thing that we keep talking about is the fact that, you know, like, you don't get over something like this. I don't imagine that there's just a day where you're like, okay, I'm over it, because it's such a precious relationship and so important. But, you know, outside of sort of, you know, collectively bringing your family together, like, how did you personally navigate that sort of grief cycle and processing it? Because like you said, it's different for everybody, but what are the things that got you through it?
Well, sorry to hear about your situation. Honestly, initially I turned to work and I just started working harder. And so I didn't do a really good job of actually finding resources or friends or community or ways to kind of get through it. Because at that time I was one of the first of my friends to experience loss like that. So I initially kind of like turned to work to kind of numb it to some extent. But again, like that, the race that we did as a family and did for 9 years, and it was a really great way, even when I wasn't no longer living in the Washington, D.C. area. I think that was the best thing that we could do, is like finding a way to like move forward. And I think celebrating him and honoring him and doing something positive going forward was the most productive thing that I did.
Well, speaking of careers, two questions from a starting point. What did your parents teach you about making your way in the world? Did they encourage you to pursue any particular career paths? And since we're talking about a portfolio career, what was the very first job that you ever had?
My parents encouraged me. I was decent on a relative basis with numbers growing up. And my parents kind of really encouraged me to kind of continue to follow that curiosity. So my first job after college was working for an investment bank, doing equity research. So when I was in college, I was really interested in finance and thought that that was kind of the path that I was supposed to follow. And I think that they just were really kind of encouraging of it, because of I was really interested. I used to always read and always look at the sports section and follow the stats. And so then when I learned about finance and the stock market and things like that, I was like, oh, this is just like a natural progression. So yeah, the first professional main job after school was working in equity research.
Yeah. Okay. So I think the thing that caught my attention the most was that they encouraged you to follow your curiosity. And I think you mentioned that you listened to our episode on giving people a reason to find you interesting. And I think that that's often so left out of our entire education system. Like, you know, I always think that the question that we ask kids, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up, is so stupid. It's like, how are you asking somebody what they want to be when they grow up? You know, you're basically saying, how do you want to spend the rest of your life when you've only lived a fraction of it?
Yep.
So how do we get that back? How do we get that, you know, curiosity impulse back? Because I think that obviously that's going to be vital to this whole idea of a portfolio career.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
As creators, we're always on the move. Whether it's a live podcast event, a pop-up shop, or a workshop, we're constantly interacting with community, and that's where Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe comes in. Imagine this. You're at a live event, a listener loves your merch, or a participant wants to sign up for your course on the spot. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, you can accept their payments right there and then, right from your iPhone, so there's no extra hardware or no delays. Total game changer. It's not just for creators. Any business owner can do this. It's about making transactions smoother and much more personal, growing your business in your way. We've been using Stripe for our products and courses for a long time, and now with Tap to Pay on iPhone, you can take your business to the next level too. So visit stripe.com/tapiphone to learn more. Remember, folks, with Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, your business is always at your fingertips.
Yeah, I think that it starts by and things that have worked for me have realized, like, you know, the tools, like, you know, how we're talking right now are more and more available than they were before. You know, things that are, there's more and more ways to kind of create projects. There's more ways to connect with people. There's more and more ways to kind of expose yourself and your skills, that I think, like, really, allows and encourages people to take chances, to build projects, to build relationships, to enhance their skills. And I think, like, it's interesting. It's like, you know, with my podcast and your podcast, it's, I bet you can kind of think it's like, it's not really work, but it is work, right? Like, you're talking to people. And I think, like, if you were to like look back on that, like, you know, and say, hey, reaching out to people that you're learning from, or you think that are interesting and stuff, and like, that is work, and that's going to help you long term. You don't know exactly how it's going to help. But I think, like, just encouraging people to, like, just reach out to people that they find are interesting or that they're learning from, I think that's a really great way to just, like, start. Podcasting is a natural to way. It's like, okay, you're already talking on Zoom, just, like, record those calls. And obviously there's a lot more nuance to podcasting, but just, like, kind of, like, breaking down some of these steps for people and just saying, like, it's a lot, it's doable, and it's easier than ever.
Yeah. Well, how do you go from working in banking to doing this?
So for me, things really started to change in the summer of 2018. It's when I signed up and was a student in a podcasting course, a cohort-based course. At the time, I had, I was kind of doing a bunch of different things and you know, a portfolio career. At that time, people were asking me questions like, hey, David, I see you doing this. I see you doing that. Like, I don't quite get it. And, this was after about, couple of months after working at a startup. And at this time I was living in New York, and before, when I was living in San Francisco, it was all about kind of, like, you know, what startup are you working at and stuff. And then when I moved to New York, I started kind of meeting interesting people that were, you know, were not really defined by, or not really interested in as much in kind of one job. They were exploring their creative interests. They were, you know, writing books, posting blog posts, creating events, experimenting in many different ways. And then in the summer of 2018, I signed up for this podcasting course I was telling you about. And that really kind of changed everything for me. Seeing kind of like-minded people all around the world all come together, all wanting to create podcasts independently, but also, like, collectively supporting each other, was really a game changer for me. And from then on, I've thankfully been able to keep the show going and just learned a lot of skills. I just saw the world differently after taking a cohort-based course in the summer of 2018.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about this idea of building a portfolio career and why it is so important. So I want to bring back a clip from a previous episode that we had with Chase Jarvis, where he talked about how this has all changed. Take a listen.
Cool.
There's a lot of sort of strong economic theory that believes that a sort of a stagnating or a lukewarm economy has student debt as its basis because the students are hamstrung with college debt. The country, the government is disincentivized to remove it. It's the only debt that you can't declare bankruptcy to escape. And the federal government makes a ton of money off the interest from student loans. So there's this a loop that disincentivizes breaking that loop. So the fact that the average student graduates with $40,000, then it's hampering our whole economy, that in and of itself will drive people away. The fact that if our parents had one job, we will have five, and the next generation or the generation that's growing up listening to this right now will have five at the same time. The schooling system that we've grown up with or that preceded us is absolutely incapable, literally 100% incapable. They cannot evolve fast enough to address this need. And so it's going to have to, and we're seeing this, all of the data is very clear that, you know, that going to a certain college only helps you if you go to the top, like 1/3%. There's like 12 or 18 schools that if you go to these schools, you are disproportionately likely to get some job X.
I thought that would be a perfect jump off point to talk about this whole idea of a portfolio model of careers. But if we're going to have a portfolio model of careers, I think to Chase's point, we have to start with a portfolio approach to our education early on. So if you were tasked with redesigning our modern education system to accommodate what is effectively a world of portfolio careers, where would you start?
I am by no means the expert on this. but, you know, I think that we should look at, or one way to start to think about it is like, what are the skills that people are utilizing? And what are the modern, what are the modern day skills? And those, you know, those adapt, right? And those evolve with technologies. But I mean, to me, and I was talking about it earlier about these cohort-based courses, I think it's really interesting of how you can create these smaller, dynamic, flexible cohort-based courses around a lot of different topics that are more current and modern and dynamic to what people need to learn, to grow, and to make a living. So I would... and that's not the be all end all. I mean, but I think like kind of the expansion of cohort based courses is definitely one way that I think will improve things to improve people's skills to kind of meet the current demands.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about this from the standpoint of an actual, you know, career building. I mean, we're talking about courses in, you know, in particular, and I'm always kind of baffled by the fact that I jokingly say that this show gave me an education that kicked the crap out of the one that I got from two degrees, an undergraduate degree from Berkeley and an MBA from Pepperdine. And yet I probably learned more usable skills from doing this show than I ever did from those two degrees. But, you know, you're talking about this whole idea, like a portfolio of careers. And April Wren talked about that. Like, we're not going to have sort of bullet points and a resume and jobs, but a portfolio. Like, why is that so vitally important for the future of work?
Well, I think it's, I'll speak from my experience, and is that I think that the resume is not, in your episode in March 2020 about giving people a reason to find you interesting, I think really speaks to this, is that the resume is becoming less and less relevant. I actually thought that on your episode there was fascinating to think about, like, what about if you were trying to find a job knowing that you could never utilize a resume? Like, what would that look like?
Yeah.
Have you thought more about that, that experiment, Srini?
Well, seeing as the fact that I'm not trying to find a job and nobody would probably hire me, I haven't, but that is an interesting, you know, experiment, because I mean, that literally was what, kicked off the foundation of Unmistakable Creative and all my blogging career was to try to find a job without my resume, because my resume was useless. it literally, you know, had no tangible evidence of anything I know how to do. And I think I talked about this in the episode where I came up with this ridiculous project called 100 Reasons You Should Hire Me. And it was an abysmal failure because I couldn't come up with 100 reasons why anybody should hire me. And that's when I realized, I was like, okay, wait a minute, this is problematic. Like, I can't even think, after 10 years of working and getting a, you know, MBA, I don't have 100 reasons why somebody should hire me. I need to clearly do something different.
Yeah. And then you started blogging, and then you started the show to try to find a job, right?
I started the blog to find a job. The show was an accident that was a byproduct of that blog.
Yeah. So I think, like, you know, the last four gigs or jobs that I've had have kind of come through and related to the body of work that I've created through the podcast. In all four of those, I don't think a resume was ever shown.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that I'm not going to be polishing up my resume more. It's more about developing a body of work, you know, sharing links and posting things online and, you know, developing relationships and further developing new skills. And I think, like, that's kind of where we are now. And that's where I think we'll continue to trend.
Yeah. So, you know, it's funny because I think one piece of pushback I get on this whole idea, I know this because we're doing research for launching a course about how to build an audience, speaking of cohort-based courses. And we just got back all the survey data yesterday. And there's this almost underlying narrative or sort of fear that, okay, what is the point of all of this if I don't have an audience that sees it? And I think that in my mind, you're presenting a pretty solid counterargument for why it doesn't matter if you don't have some massive audience consuming the thing, because it's still worth doing. It still opens doors that you wouldn't have, you know, possibly known. Like, I had no idea this show would lead to all of this.
Yeah. And it keeps you going, right?
Like, yeah,
it does. You're not saying, oh, well, depending on where the audience is, then I'm going to keep going or not.
I mean, right? I've been at this for 10 years, so yeah.
So what else did you learn from the survey?
Well, honestly, I think that people spend a lot of time worrying about a lot of the wrong things. Like, they're concerned that they don't know how to do SEO, that they're not getting traction on social media. It's kind of funny that there are all these things. And I realized, I'm like, most of these things are not the reason that you're struggling to gain traction. The fact that you're not gaining traction has a lot to do with the fact that you're not even doing the work, period, in my mind.
Mm.
And you're focusing on the sort of, you know, like, things, ancillary activities surrounding the work at the cost of doing the work.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
As creators, we're always on the move. Whether it's a live podcast event, a pop-up shop, or a workshop, we're constantly interacting with community, and that's where Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe comes in. Imagine this. You're at a live event, a listener loves your merch, or a participant wants to sign up for your course on the spot. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, you can accept their payments right there and then, right from your iPhone, so there's no extra hardware or no delays. Total game changer. It's not just for creators. Any business owner can do this. It's about making transactions smoother and much more personal, growing your business in your way. We've been using Stripe for our products and courses for a long time, and now with Tap to Pay on iPhone, you can take your business to the next level too. So visit stripe.com/tapiphone to learn more. Remember, folks, with Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, your business is always at your fingertips.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I could pull it up, but I think one of the things when I started the podcast, the initial blog post by Seth Godin talking about the podcasting fellowship, which I think is now called the podcasting workshop, was around, I think it doesn't matter how many people listen to it. Doesn't matter if you have a sponsor or not. It matters if you made it. And that line really stuck with me, was like making things. And the act of making things alone has a lot of different benefits from the skills, but also like for me, like I really like the idea of just, you know, creating, like having a conversation just like this, editing, cleaning things up a little bit, and then publishing it. And it's a really empowering feeling. And so much of like, you feel that a lot more with projects than you do in jobs, so to speak. So I think that line really like stood out to me, and Seth's been a huge influence to me. But just the idea of like, you know, and it talks a lot about just what you were saying there about like, what are the stats that really matter? What are the metrics that really matter? And it's not always downloads.
Uh-huh.
So I've really just tried to continue to think about that, because I remember when I started my show, people were like, well, you know, how are you going to monetize, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, I don't know. Like, I just want to make this, like, you know, I want to kind of explore what I'm seeing. Like, it felt great to work on multiple things. And, after, you know, kind of a new worldview. And then, you know, my first interview was with my roommate. I was curious about how he paid rent. That'd be a good idea to ask my roommate how he pays rent, but, and so just, yeah, like,
probably right? Just in case he's selling cocaine and you don't know it.
So it just was. And so from there, then I just like, I started and I just kind of kept going. And then, and so rarely along the way do people ask like, well, how many downloads do you have or how many sponsors do you have? It's like, I think once you keep going with your work and your project, people say, oh, this person's serious about it. Like, that's interesting to me. Yeah. And, you know, as I mentioned earlier, like the last 4 gigs and projects and jobs have kind of come through the podcast, like through relationships and things like that. And that's not, you know, I think that those are way more valuable than, you know, $10 or $100 sponsorship kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, you know, it's funny you asked, you know, what else did people say in the survey? So I pulled it up I thought it would be an interesting, you know, point of discussion for us, but it's amazing how much metrics not going in the direction people want them to is like this, you know, thing that absolutely kills their motivation. And you're talking about making it for the sake of making it, which I wrote an entire book about this. So, you're preaching to the choir. And at the same time, I'm mindful of the fact that it's kind of easy to have that perspective when you're sitting in my shoes with an audience. And it can be very frustrating. We don't like, so how do people find that motivation that you're talking about to actually have that perspective that it doesn't matter, you know, how many people listen, it matters that you made it. It doesn't matter how many people read it, it matters that you wrote it. That's such a counterintuitive idea for most people, because you live in this world where everybody's parade of accomplishments is on perpetual display.
Yeah, I think it becomes back to like getting clear as to like upfront, like what are the goals? And because once you start a project and once you start creating a body of work, you're always going to think more, 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 more. But I think if you get clear up front and say, you know, this is just a project that I'm going to keep doing, and here's the main things that I'm focused on. For me, it was like continuing the show. For me, it was like, am I getting better? Are the conversations improving? Like the art of interviewing, as you know, is it's an ongoing thing. Like there's just so much to learn from there. So like conversation alone, just learning the art of conversation, learning the art of asking questions. I would love to continue to, that's a lifelong skill, to continue to get better at. So I think like being up clear up front as much as possible to say like, here's the goal. And knowing that once you start and numbers start to get in the, like, are just naturally going to come up, be like, I'm not going to focus on those.
Yeah. Like I have often sacrificed metrics for the sake of a good story. You're like, this is a no-name guest. And I'm like, yeah, but they're interesting. Yeah. And then I've said no to people who would probably cause our downloads to skyrocket.
And what's the decision making process there, and has it changed or is it stayed the same?
It's never changed. It's always stayed the same. The primary filter, I think, as I was telling you before we hit record, was that curiosity, you know, like, am I curious about this person? Do I think their story is interesting? And, you know, is this going to be a story that serves the people who are listening, is always the choice. It doesn't matter if they're some famous person. In fact, some of the most famous people I've interviewed have been some of our worst interviews, and some of them were so bad we didn't publish them.
Jury's still out on this one, but
well, I mean, that's the thing, right? Is that to me, and that's actually a tough choice, particularly when it becomes a business, and where you're always kind of, you know, in this balancing act between the integrity of the content and, you know, what's good for the business. Like recently we had, you know, the CEO of one of the companies that advertises on our show reach out, and I was just like, okay. Like I had to look very closely and be like, yeah, they would actually pay to be on the show. And I'm like, this is a thin line. I'm like, we're basically, you know, at a line where it's like, are we willing to compromise editorial policy for money? And, you know, and that's always a tough choice. But I also was like, okay, this person actually probably would make sense as a guest. If they don't, like, we've turned down the CEOs of companies who've advertised on our show, and we've said no. We're like, just because you advertise on the show, it doesn't mean you should be a guest.
Yeah, and they need to respect the show, or respect your decision. Yeah.
I think the thing that you mentioned is, you know, knowing the goal, and the idea that the goal is just to keep going is something that I think most people are just like, well, that seems pointless. What if it's not going to lead anywhere? And in my mind, I was like, that's kind of the point, is you don't know where it's going to lead. You can't know where it's going to lead. You're not, you know, Marty McFly. You don't have a damn time machine. You can't predict how the future is going to turn out. But it's still worth doing, because it's basically, you're going to know things you didn't know before. And the other argument that I always make for this is the value of skills that you can transfer to everything else that you do. That's one thing I learned from writing books. Now, I don't know what, you know, how it's been for you, but like, I'm guessing there are probably skills from your finance days that have transferred to this. Like, I realized I probably wasn't going to get another book deal. And at first I was really disappointed. I thought, what a waste. And then I realized, it was like, I got the most invaluable skill of all from doing that. And that was that I learned how to make ideas happen.
What did it feel like when you first figured that out?
I mean, like, would I like to get another opportunity to write a book with a publisher? Yeah. If the opportunity presented itself, of course I would. But it made me realize that, wait a minute, that actually is a skill that is 10,000 times more valuable than a book deal because of the fact that it's something I learned once, but I can keep using forever. It's kind of like the example I gave was, you know, I think I wrote this somewhere. So like if somebody said, you know what, I'll give you $1 million today and it'll be in your bank, or I'll teach you how to make $1 million over the next year, which one would you choose? And any reasonably intelligent person would realize that the value of the second is exponentially greater because once you learn how to do it, you can do it 100 times.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the thing about creating a body of work, it's that feeling of I can make something. And I'm sure, you know, it's for you with your show and you've done it way more than I have, but like that weekly feeling of like, ooh, it'd be so cool if I reach out to this person and they say yes. And they respond to a cold email and then you chat with them and then, you know, conversation's great. And then you publish something a week later. Like that's a incredible feeling. And, you know, before starting the podcast, I didn't have a body of work, you know, as I was talking about how I worked in finance and, you know, I had good jobs, so to speak. But I didn't have anything that had my name on it or like was anything that I could, you know, show anybody. And I think now just even there's, you know, the unit or the size of the body of work can be a lot smaller. I mean, you don't have to have, you know, 200 episodes like me, but, or 1,000 episodes plus like you, but I think like a small blog post of just like, you know, here's the scope of the project or here's the scope of my role or here's where I got stuck or things like that. Like really showcases how you think and how you adapted and the decisions you made. And I think that that's super valuable and you never know who's going to read your stuff or reach out to you. And I think that that's really cool. And, but that the feeling of like just making ideas happen and creating the smallest thing possible is incredible.
Yeah. I think that the fact that you just talked about creating the smallest thing possible is such a vitally important point. I want to spend more time on that because what do? We live in this world, like I said, where everybody's like, oh, I got to build the next unicorn. I need to build the next Uber. I need to build, you know, the next Airbnb. And so people undervalue these small things. But I think they seem to forget that, by the way, you realize every single thing that you think that's big now literally started small.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what was your first episode like? I mean, we asked about, well, I shared a little bit about mine, but I would love to hear your first episode. Like, did you think you're going to have 1,000 episodes?
No. So the first episode literally was a lesson in a course about how to start a blog, ironically. And the very first guy I interviewed told me, don't underestimate what this is going to do for you. And wow. It was literally just a MP3 file on my regular blog, no podcast, no iTunes, nothing. I just recorded a conversation and uploaded it with a few bullet points. That's how this all started.
Wow. Seems like that guy's got a free round of beers on you whenever he wants, huh?
Well, funny enough, like when I met him, I remember walking into my literary agent's office 7 years after that conversation, and I looked on her shelf and I saw his book and I was like, you won't, this was literally right after I'd signed my book contract. I'm like, wow. I was like, this is surreal. I was like, Josh Hanegard, he's one of your clients. I was like, Josh was the first person I ever interviewed.
Yep. And you'll always remember that. And I think that there's so much power in trying to be the first for other people. Like, you know, I'm talking about my first podcast guest. There's sometimes we're at like events and I'll try to introduce him or whatever. And then I'm like, oh, by the way, he was the first podcast guest. And it's I will always remember him as that way. And just how the way we're talking about Josh here. And I think it's, you know, that's a really, if you're asking what is something that you could do for somebody else, it's like be their first customer, be their first, you know, referral, be their first, like that is such a incredible thing that you could be a gift to somebody else for. But
I know my first readers. I know who they are, and I remember my earliest listeners, like probably my longest running listener who I actually communicate with weekly and is actually a member of our community is a guy named Peter in New York. And, you know, we jokingly say Peter's the OG listener. Like he's been here so long that he's literally known us from long before we were even called the Unmistakable Creative.
Shout out, Peter.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk more about this, the smallest possible?
Yeah, let's do that. Because, well, Seth talks about this, right? The smallest viable audience. And people hate that. People absolutely hate that idea because they're like, oh, it's only worth doing if I can reach the most number of people. And so I actually am curious, you know, as somebody who has started in 2018, what your view is on this. So we're the anomaly of the podcast world because we started long before everybody else. We grew slower and we're smaller. But what I realized is in a world that has becoming increasingly noisy and as the media landscape becomes more fragmented, loyalty in my mind is going to matter a lot more than reach. Mm.
Loyalty is going to matter a lot more.
Yeah, that's what I think.
Yeah. That
having a small, loyal group of people is going to be far more valuable because inevitably you are going to have fragmentation. Like, you know, that's the thing is that opportunity creates competition and competition creates fragmentation.
Yeah. Well, smallness also goes back to being, you know, specific and unique. And this ties back to, you know, the episode that we were talking about earlier about give people a reason to find you interesting. And I thought it was really fascinating around the idea of like how to stand out. But you can stand out to a small group. So, I mean, I think smallest possible is, you know, like if you're smallest to 10 people and those 10 people can, you know, open doors, become your best friends, be your clients, like that's could be good enough.
Yeah. Well, you know, I wrote a sort of counter argument to Kevin Kelly's 1,000 True Fans and it was titled 100 True Fanatics. It was like 1,000 true fans is hard in the world today, way harder than it was when Kevin Kelly originally came up with that idea. But 100 true fanatics is basically the first step to 1,000 true fans.
Mm. And how do you think about that post today? Do you agree with it more now?
I think it's well, if you are starting out, I think that you need a number that is something that you feel you can reasonably hit. 1,000 is a really long way off. It's funny because you're talking about what do I learn from the show. A lot of the social science that I've been exposed to shaped that concept. So we had Sean Acors, a happiness researcher here a long time ago. And one of the things that he talked about, and I've talked about this before, he's like the brain makes progress towards a goal based on the perceived distance to that goal. Now, if you have zero people reading what you do, listening to, you know, whatever your podcast is, reading your books, reading your blog, 1,000 is an eternity. It's like, whoa, that is so far that it's demotivating. 100 doesn't seem so far-fetched. So it's easier to maintain your motivation. And if you get the first 100, then it becomes easier to get to the next 100 and the next 100 and the next 100 and so on.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a fascinating way to think about it. I think the smallest possible minimum viable, like I try to think about like what's a minimum viable episode. You know, what's good enough to get going. And I recently you know, I not nearly as long as you, but have been podcasting for a little while, and also like I really loved being a coach to podcasters and help them launch their shows. And I you know, was in that space for a little while in 2018, 2019, and kind of moved on to some other things in my portfolio and other stuff. And then earlier this year, I was like, you know, I've got some knowledge on here and got some experience, and I've know how to make, you know, I've done some stuff with other courses. And I was like, what would it look like if I were to just to make a course? And, you know, it's a free for now course, and it's how to start and scale a podcast. And the funny part, and this goes back to the minimum viable and the art of just making things just to make things, like, you know, I just put it out there and was like, this was fun. I felt like a bolt of energy one day to like package this all up and to make it. And, you know, it was just like, it was really fun and energizing. And the response from people is always like, how's that going? You know, like, how many people are taking it? And like, again, like that was not my goal. My goal was like, hey, I've developed enough level of expertise around this. I like doing this. And while it's still fresh, and I want to create something from this. And so it's, you know, call it a minimum viable course. And hopefully it's for the smallest possible audience, but enough for somebody to utilize this information and to either start a new show or keep going with their existing show. So I don't know. I just really like these little smaller experiments, but you know, if someone's like, well, what's this for? It's like, well, now I could showcase to someone like, this is how I think about things. Or so you never know where these little like hooks or these little small little assets or these small little things that you do will end up, you know, turning into something later on.
Yeah, I love this. I mean, I think you just gave me the title for this episode, The Power of Minimum Viable Projects. And it's funny because I actually wrote an article on Medium titled Start a Minimum Viable Podcast.
Wow. And so, what was in that that article?
It was precisely the story I told you. This is how you start a minimum viable podcast. Record a conversation and publish it by uploading an MP3 and share it with a few people. That's it. I mean, that's literally how Unmistakable Creative started.
Yeah.
But the thing is that was kind of my default has always been rapid bias towards action. Like I don't spend a lot of time belaboring, you know, whether an idea will be perfect or work. I mean, granted, I think that there is something to be said for what Tony Fadell in his new book Build calls delayed intuition, where that can be very useful too, particularly if you're talking about, you know, like massive ideas that will take a lot of capital and time. But a lot of the ideas we're talking about, the portfolio projects, you know, these minimum viable projects, most of them don't take time. They just take the guts to actually get off your ass and do it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think we'll always, you kind of never know what will pop up. Like there was, you'll never know what will pop up, but also your mind will start to be attracted once you know, oh, I have this link or I have this blog post or I have this, you know, small minimum viable project that I can share with somebody else. Like, you know, I'm not sure, you know, how active you are on Twitter and stuff, but like there's things that are just kind of floating around there. And if you're like, oh, if I've got a link handy to at least showcase my point of view or something I've done related to this, like I can contribute to this conversation. And so those things, like you never know when that's going to happen, but there's definitely been times where I'm like, ah, like I've got experience on this, but I don't have anything to show for it. Maybe next time.
Well, I think you made probably one of the most important points you've made in this conversation, and that's the difference between being a spectator and a participant. When you're simply a consumer of content, you end up being a spectator. But when you create, you actually have an opportunity to be a participant.
Yeah. Yeah. And you never know. Like there's, you never know what it's going to turn into. And just, it goes back to this, like the idea around the minimum viable. Like once you start, like for me, it's like, as I mentioned, like it's such an empowered feeling just to know like every week I'm putting something out. Like whatever else can happen during the week. I mean, obviously there's a lot of things that go on in the world these days, but like just knowing that I'm publishing a new episode each week, like it's such an incredible feeling. And I would love for more people to feel that way too. And just knowing that you're making progress, it is just, it's incredible feeling. It's like the line, like, Once you learn to see, you can't unsee. And that's kind of how I feel these days about, you know, creating minimum viable episodes, minimum viable projects. And thankfully, I've been able to kind of build a portfolio around it to be able to keep going.
Mm. Awesome. Well, this has been really fascinating. I have really enjoyed talking about this. It's kind of been wide ranging, but a little different than other interviews we've done with sort of no set sort of structure. But I think that's what made it so interesting. And I think it's appropriate given that we're talking about portfolios. So I have one final question for you, which is how we finish all of our interviews. What do you think it is that makes somebody or something unmistakable?
Unmistakable creative means like that. To me, it's like, it's a feeling. And it's a feeling that like this person goes back to what we were talking about before, like is a creator that is on the offense, that is taking action and however way that they choose to express it. I think that you can see it within other people. And I know that I can feel it. And that's the way that I would like to continue.
Amazing. Well, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to join us and share your story and your insights with listeners. Where can people find out more about you, your work, and everything else that you're up to?
Well, first, Srini, thank you so much for this conversation. This was amazing. Can't wait to check out all these other different references that you mentioned. it's not about where to find me. It's like, I think we should all check out these blog posts and everything that you talked about. But if people are interested in learning more about Portfolio Career Podcast, that's, you know, it's all the episodes are at portfoliocareerpodcast.com and all everywhere else you listen to stuff. You can also see the link to the course that I talked about there. And then also I've got a personal website, davidbinsky.com. And I'm on Twitter, anywhere else. Pretty much if you want to find me on the internet, you can find me.
Amazing. And for everybody listening, we will wrap the show with that.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.
Have you ever felt a twinge of worry about AI taking over your job or diluting your creativity? Well, what if you could turn that fear into creative fuel? We've just published an amazing new ebook called The 4 Keys to Success in an AI World, and this is more than just a guide. It's a deep exploration into the human skills that AI can't touch, the skills that are essential for standing out and thriving no matter how much technology evolves. We're talking about real differentiators here like creativity, emotional intelligence, critical thinking, and much more. Inside, you'll find actionable insights and strategies to develop these skills, whether you're a creative person, a business person, or just simply someone who loves personal development. This isn't a story about tech taking over. It's a story of human creativity thriving alongside AI. Picture this, AI as your creative co-pilot, not just as a tool, but a collaborator that enhances your unique human skills. The 4 Keys ebook will show you exactly how to do that and view AI in a new way that empowers you instead of overshadows you. Transform your creative potential today. Head over to unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. Use the number 4, K-E-Y-S. That's unmistakablecreative.com/4keys and download your free copy.